Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Ziperot. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in the STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their field at the local, national, and international levels. Today, I'm joined by David Schmidt, the Chief Financial Officer of Muscle Polymers, a company developing next-generation adhesives inspired by mussels. Yes, the ones that stick on rocks underwater. David has an incredible background. He's helped build companies in chemical, polymers, medical devices, semiconductors, flat panel displays, and renewable energy. He served as a CFO, COO, board member, and corporate officer, and he's a Lehigh University graduate, which is especially cool since we're right here in the Lehigh Valley. How are you doing, David?
Thank you so much for having me on your program, Abigail.
Yeah.
This is fantastic, and I'm happy to share our story. So, yes, this is great.
I'm really excited to dig into both the science and business side of what you do, because I think that intersection is something that we don't see a lot and that you are particularly in. So I want to start at the beginning. You earned your undergraduate degree from Lehigh University, and now you're working at a high-tech material startup just minutes away from the campus. When you were in college, did you already know you wanted to go into that leadership role, or did that develop kind of later?
Good question. I have been leading all my life. I have been leading since prior to high school. Everything that I have been involved in have been in leadership types of roles.
There are certain people that are like leaders, and you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I understand where you're kind of going with this. So when I was in high school, I wasn't really too sure what I wanted to do, but I had gravitated to the sciences. So I was thinking about chemistry and that vector of sorts. So I ended up as a chemical engineer. But as a chemical engineer, never really wanted to design that distillation column for a living. I kind of wanted to run that business.
Right.
So I also did business economics and international finance. And so this is where you bridge the gap between science and business. So that's how I started.
Yeah. And then how you started, what did you think your career would look like at age 20? Because I know you said you didn't quite want to do that compared to what you're ending up doing now.
Right. So I needed experience. When you come out of college and you sort of need experience to get started, and I needed to know how money flowed. So the first job out of college, I joined a merchant bank, and it was largely a business brokerage firm, but I did that for a purpose of learning how money flowed, how businesses were financed. That's where I learned how to write business plans.
Yes.
Subsequent to that, I met a Ethicon entrepreneur, and he brought me on board as the finance officer for his invasive medical device business. And that's where I got exposed to polymeric systems. And so what we were working on back then were hydrogels and making invasive medical devices slippery when wet, when we put them inside the body.
Yeah.
Right. And so I went from invasive medical devices to, on the business side, doing industrial plastics, manufacturing 40,000 pounds of plastics at a time. We went from there. I went to semiconductor manufacturing equipment.
Yeah.
So that was basically thinner, harder, smoother, faster. So we were achieving back in 1999 and 2000 atomic layer deposition results using physical vapor deposition tool sets.
Wow.
I know all this sounds really, really big, but then I took a change in my career, and what was missing at that point was large multinational experiences.
Okay.
So I transitioned from being with smaller growth-oriented organizations to large corporate multinational, which I joined Honeywell International, which is a $50 billion sized organization with 250,000 employees.
Yeah.
And I was on their growth side of the business. Anecdotally, the job was to get the business invested in businesses that they should be, given their assets and capabilities, not necessarily the businesses that they were in.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, that's a growth role.
Seeing the future, trying to develop what could be. Right.
What could be, how to optimize the utilization of our assets and our employees and our skill sets and our technologies. And actually, that brings me to a common theme with anything that has been in my career, which is advanced materials.
Yes.
So I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. And what I'm not good at is bits and bytes.
Okay.
Bits and bytes being, computers, computer apps, computer programming, that type of thing. But you give me a boron trifluoride molecule, and I'll tell you how to build a business around it.
Yeah, so that's kind of the more analytical business side, which I don't think is seen a lot. And it's more of the chemical side, which we do see. But I will say, with all those many things that you have done in your background, what skills do you think have transferred through all of those things, besides maybe leadership and organization that you think?
Curiosity.
Curiosity?
Curiosity and drive. So as an innovator, you've got to be curious as to, can I do it better? Can I do it faster? Can I? Is there an unmet need out there? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. And I do say this often, but as an engineer, when an engineer is presented with a problem, the immediate reaction is to solve the problem.
Right.
That's what we do. We solve problems. The business guys, on the other hand, they look at the situation and they see a new product or a new innovation and they go, oh, can we make money at that? And okay, both of those are good questions.
Right.
But
they're just different.
Yes, they're different questions, but I submit that they're also the wrong question. Or that's not necessarily the wrong question. There is a better question.
Mm-hmm.
And that better question is, does anybody care?
Yeah.
And so if I have an unmet need out there in the marketplace where I can, my curiosity and my drive can innovate, and I can solve that problem to fix that what keeps me awake at night, unmet need, then I have demand. And that becomes market pull as opposed to product push.
Right.
So it's great to innovate and develop new products. But unless does anyone care?
Right, exactly. Then you don't have a product if no one cares.
Right, correct.
Yes. And I know with curiosity and trying things and looking at the demands, I don't know for a fact if this applies to you, but there always comes a little bit of failure. Were there moments where you felt completely kind of out of your depth in any line of work that you've done in maybe, whoa, I need to take a step back and like see how this works or maybe re-educate myself or any of that?
Fail fast, fail often.
Yes.
I have failed. I have succeeded. And failure is where learning occurs. So I want to fail. I want my employees to fail. If we're not, then we're not discovering is where I'm going with that. We're not innovating.
You're not learning.
Because if we're not failing, all we're doing is we're following a recipe for success. So if I'm going to be a disruptor of something, mm-hmm. I've got to try something and it may not work. And that's okay. Often some of the employees that I work with, they're ashamed to come to me and saying, oh, this experiment didn't work. No, this experiment did work. What did you learn?
And what can we do different?
That's a great question, Abby. That is a great question.
So let's talk about Muscle Polymers. How did you first get involved with this company? Because I know it kind of started near here.
Right. Okay. The Muscle Polymer story is a great story in and of itself. Muscle Polymers is the commercial activity set of about two decades of academic research out of Purdue University. But we didn't just go and find Muscle Polymers. This was actually a process that one of my colleagues, George Boyajian over at Muscle Polymers, and his partner, Eric Anderson, embarked on early on. The four of us in the leadership team have all had careers before, and at this time we set out to find the best technology that we could find given our skill sets. And so we set up a set of criteria that we would evaluate technologies that we were going to look at. Do we know the exit before we even start? Is there a barrier to entry, intellectual property and patents?
Yes.
Do we have an idea of the exit before we even start? Is there credibility in the technology, or are the scientists insane? Whatever that may
right.
be.
Just right? What are we looking at?
So we set up this criteria, and we went to academic labs. We went to government labs. We looked at shelved research projects at large multinationals. We evaluated about 600 to 800 different technologies.
Wow.
Out of those, we took a deep dive on about 30 of them. Without those 30, we took an option on 6 of them.
Okay.
We actually licensed 3 of them.
Oh, wow.
And we're commercializing one of them.
Dwindled down to one.
And that one is muscle polymers.
Yeah.
So where I'm going with that, Abby, is there was a process of selection to against a set of criteria that would enable success. All too often, and I've been involved in some of these businesses in the past, all too often businesses are started by postdocs that are commercializing their academic research,
yes.
which goes back to the question of engineering, can I solve that problem? Business, can I make money? But does anybody care?
Sure.
Is this an actual viable product that can be marketed?
Or,
okay.
Yeah.
So at that time, George Boyajian and I had worked on previous projects together, and so we've known each other for a decade and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about muscle polymers and where are we going to put this? Are we going to put this in the Princeton, New Jersey incubator? Are we going to put this in this incubator? You know, where are
yeah.
we going to set the? And we came out to the Lehigh Valley, and we interviewed with the Ben Franklin team out here.
Yeah.
And the Lehigh Valley is an outstanding place for resources, given the proximity of Lehigh and Muhlenberg and Lafayette.
Oh, all the research, yeah.
It is a transit hub, a straight line into Manhattan, an hour north of Philadelphia, an hour and a half outside of New York City. Airports in the proximity.
It is a hub where there's so many places you can go, and that's insane to me how fast you can get to places, or like you're saying. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is actually how muscle polymers got started here
right.
in the Lehigh Valley. We flew out to West Lafayette, Indiana, which is where Purdue is, and spent time with the technology transfer offices out there, and ultimately licensed that technology and brought it here for commercialization,
yeah.
which is why I characterized this earlier as muscle polymers is the commercial activity of a decade and a half of academic research out of Purdue.
Right.
So
thank you so much for telling us kind of how the startup happened. We're going to take a short break here on Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with David Schmidt.
Unlimited possibilities, folk music from across the Atlantic to the Lehigh Valley. Songs from this country's roots to the songs of today.
Oh, baby, I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready to let you go.
The Carter Family to Joan Baez, Patty Griffin to John Gorka. There's always a great variety on Unlimited Possibilities. Friday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY Allentown.
This is Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with David Schmidt. So, David, we talked a little bit about your startup of the company. How is it now, and what are you really trying to focus on now?
Muscle polymers is super exciting on a day-to-day basis. We signed our lease over here in Ben Franklin in February of 2020 just to get shut down by COVID. So we really couldn't
even
get into our facility
yeah.
to do our research until such July. So
okay.
when we started, it was two of us in an administrative office, and then it was two of us in one lab, and then there was two offices, one lab, two offices, two labs. And so it's one of the benefits of being in a business incubator. You can grow incrementally within the spaces that are provided.
Right.
For the first couple of years, we ran the entire company on 3 grams of polycatechol styrene.
Oh, wow.
Now, what is polycatechol styrene? Polycatecholstyrene is a biomimetic of the muscle protein that is responsible for underwater bonding. So when the muscle wants to stick to a coral reef or a barnacle sticks to a ship, the muscle sends out a tendril, an arm. At the end of that arm is a foot. When that muscle wants to stick, it excretes a protein at time of use.
Yeah.
Within the protein, there's an amino acid. Within the amino acid, there is a catechol compound. And that catechol compound is responsible for that underwater bonding. And so polycatecholstyrene is not the extraction of that muscle protein. It is a biomimetic. It is a copy of that muscle protein. So it is a synthetic pathway to enable underwater bonding. And so at the onset, we were just simply looking at the features and the benefits and what we could do with this. And we thought that this was going to be an underwater adhesives company, and only an underwater adhesives company, of which we would grow for several years and then probably end up selling it.
Okay.
Well, I get to work every single day because we are learning all of the different mechanisms by which these materials function.
Okay.
And where I'm going is that there is enablement that is far beyond underwater bonding. So the mouth is a wet environment.
Right.
So we started looking at
teeth
and braces and brackets and whatnot. And while we were doing that, by the way, it works.
Oh,
so
it does?
It absolutely works in a mouth environment.
So is it different? Like, would it decay at all, or would it affect maybe your teeth? Have you looked on that side yet, or no?
This is exactly where I'm going. I'm so glad you asked that question. So while we were doing our adhesive work in the mouth, we saw something. It's like, oh my gosh, what is that? And said, okay, let's go down to Lehigh University and use their electron microscope and take a look at that. And then we said, oh my gosh, could it actually be? So we had used their X-ray crystallography and EDAC systems over there. Oh my gosh, we are confirming it. It turns out that in a mouth environment, this polycatecholstyrene stimulates the redeposition of enamel on dead teeth.
Oh, wow.
So what we were seeing was hydroxyapatite crystals and calcium phosphate. Literally depositing on.
Right, and kind of regrowing into a new.
Well, careful with the word growth, because it's redeposition. What it's doing is it's recruiting this out of the mouth saliva and depositing a new layer of enamel on that tooth, which, by the way, was a real tooth taken out of a real body and so on. So, okay, so now I have a functionality that's beyond underwater adhesion.
Right.
So I like to sponsor a lot of give back. So I sponsor a lot of capstone teams.
Aww.
And so I had a capstone team and they were focusing in on biomedical applications. So we were looking at scaffolds and with the idea of a hip implant or shoulder implant and whatnot. So we coated those. Turns out it stimulates the growth of osteoblasts. So you theoretically could cut down the recuperation time of an implant from, say, 6 months down to 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So there's that, too. Another thing, it's just fascinating. Turns out that polycatecholstyrene and these muscle catechol compounds are UV absorptive. Okay, well, that is kind of interesting. A different capstone team took that with a wet bonding and UV absorptive and formulated a water sunscreen that you could wouldn't come off in the...
Interesting, because it's resistant to water. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so we're finding that this stuff sticks to everything. We stick to Teflon, just FYI. So we started looking at fibers. So carbon fiber and aramid fiber and boron fiber, and the list kind of goes on here. And it absolutely sticks to all of those. But I'll give you an example, aramid fiber. Aramid fibers are susceptible to UV degradation. And, well, if we can coat a aramid fiber, we can prevent the UV degradation of an aramid fiber. Do you know what aramid fibers are being used for? The manufacture of Kevlar. Kevlar vests, bulletproof vests. So I might be able to offer the U.S. military a way to have a longer useful life of a bulletproof vest that would otherwise be in Saudi Arabia or What I'm getting at is these materials are functionally disruptive in a positive way for so many different applications. We used to think this was going to be an underwater adhesives company, but now I have the ability to change the face of medicine.
Right. In so many different – the thing that's shocking to me is that it's one thing that can do so many different things. What was the timeline like to – because I know you said you started kind of the July into COVID, into finding all these things out and kind of how did that develop and how were you like, oh, this can do that? Was it ideas or how did that develop?
Another great question. So catechol compounds and muscle proteins have been studied since the 80s.
Right, yeah.
So this is a long time ago. And during that time, there have been 100,000 or more academic papers written on catechol chemistry. There have been many patents issued using that muscle, that specific muscle protein, of the likes of large multinational organizations, big Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies. What's interesting is absolutely none of those academic papers or patents have ever turned into a commercial product.
I was going to ask, because how can you use that into, like, how does the licensing work? But there is none because no one has turned it into anything.
Correct.
Okay.
And the reason is when the muscle wants to stick, it manufactures that at time of use and it consumes it at time of use. So there's no way to formulate and make a product for inventory that you could make on a commercial scale. Our material is shelf stable. It's 7 years, 8 years, 10 years in actual practice. So this is Purdue and Muscle Polymers.
Yeah.
To our knowledge, we are the only commercial supply of catechol compounds out there at scale.
Yeah,
at scale.
That can last and is it,
Okay. So you're asking a question of how did we ideate and come up with all of these ideas? And while there's some of that that we absolutely did, we're looking at those academic papers and saying this worked with the muscle protein itself, which is called polydopamine.
Right.
And asking ourselves, will that same experiment work with our material, polycatechol styrene?
And it does.
And so far, we have had a one-to-one correlation on each one of those.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. So kind of flipping into applications in the real world, SeaTac is being used for things like coral reef restorations, marine repair, and even defense applications. Can you kind of walk us through a real world use case that you have done?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So all of these things are super exciting just at a pure science level.
Oh, yeah.
But now how do you translate that into a product that somebody will pay for and trade a dollar for?
Yes.
And so we were already working with the U.S. Navy on an unmet need, and they have a problem with some of their vessels where there are materials that are attached to the exterior of their vessels that fall off when they're out in the open ocean.
Right.
The way they fix these vessels today is they have to dry dock the vessel and do the repair and then send it back out to the ocean. And if you think about that, that's at least a $40 million adventure to dry dry dock.
I did not expect.
Yes.
Is that caused by time too, or is it just fully to dry it and that? Like, that's not including the time cost you're losing, right?
Well, if you think about the size of a vessel, there's planning that's involved and you've got to get the logistics team to actually get it into a port.
Right.
Now, all those sailors are coming off the boat and they're not on the boat. Now you're pulling the boat out of the water.
So it's a real effort.
And we're offering them a way to do open ocean repair without ever having to bring that sub or that vessel into port.
Yeah.
So that is one direct application that's a work in process. And I could tell you a little more about that, but that's one. On a very mundane or consumer level, not so much the Department of Defense, but it turns out that people like eyelash extensions.
Yeah.
So
very
popular. Yes, very, very popular. Now, I'm not talking about the do-it-yourself ones. I'm talking about the professional.
It's
where they take one lash and they glue it to one lash.
Yes.
The glue that they use for that is highly toxic and is often very irritating to
the
client as well as the esthetician that's doing that. So we have a market pull for a formulated product that we are doing eyelash glue, replacing the cyanoacrylates that are being used today. And I can tell you that this absolutely hits the non-irritation scale. So we've actually put this on our own people. So my accounts manager out in Utah, she laid down on a table right here with an esthetician in the Lehigh Valley, and we glued a set of eyelashes on her. I had a summer intern from Boston University come down, and she had her eyelashes extended with our muscle protein. And I will say that I had a big hero who offered himself, who is our production
and he also got his eyelashes done.
And he got his eyelashes done.
So he was definitely probably feeling pretty that day.
Absolutely. And there are a couple of more. So we are working on a tooth sensitivity project. A treatment for caries. So I have put that material on my own teeth.
Interesting.
So those are some examples of which we are taking the fundamental base material and using that as an ingredient in formulated products.
And it's nice to see, though, that you know your product and you know that it's safe and that it works enough that you as a company on yourselves are experimenting on it, which I don't think you see very often. It's mainly you maybe hire out or try to figure out a solution to not test on humans first. And it's really, I think, cool and fascinating to me that you guys are like, this works and it's safe. Let's try it on ourselves.
Well, and in good best practice, we did do some toxicity studies.
Of course. Yeah. But in general, you're like, before you release it, which I think is fantastic. And I just have to ask you personally, what application excites you the most out of everything that you guys are doing in your company?
Oh, you know, all of these, and it sounds like a canned answer, but every single one of these applications that we're working on is game-changing and exciting in and of itself. I absolutely have to say that. Now, we can chase all of them, and there are many. We can chase all of them and destroy the business, go bankrupt by spreading ourselves too thin. So what we have intentionally done is chosen three areas to focus on, carry those across the finish line before we work on the next. So we have the defense and industrial applications. We've got the eyelash and cosmetic applications, which, by the way, there's also a fingernail polish in the mix.
Interesting. The studies just came out, though, that a lot of nail places use very toxic, like gel. So that's very interesting.
Absolutely. And what we're doing is we hope to bridge the gap between the traditional nail polish and the gel coats. Functionality of that will be right in between. It won't be as hard as a gel coat, but it won't be just a day or two as a standard nail polish.
Right.
You'll be right kind of in the middle.
Which I think is a need. Like, I think people aren't sure if they need gel but it lasts longer.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you so much, David, for joining me today and sharing your journey and Muscle Polymer's journey from finance and leadership to cutting edge polymer science.
Happy to talk with you, and I'd be happy to talk with you any other time.
Yes, I'd be glad to. Thank you for listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY. I'm Abigail Wood, and I'll see you next time.